Moline Haw.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show.
On 670 The Score.
On the sidelines, however, Vandersloot almost loses the handle, reels it back in. Vandersloot from beyond the arc. Yes!
Moline Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So the Chicago Sky were on the station last night. There was no baseball. Both teams were off yesterday. And we got the first ever broadcast of the Chicago Sky on the Score.
Yes, it was a big moment for that.
And we're doing seven games this year.
Seven games, yep. And last night was the first. Kylan Mills was the play-by-play. She did a terrific job. Layla Rahimi did the color analyst work and commentary. And Alyssa Bergamini did the pregame and postgame. And I think that
I saw a great photo of the three of them on the floor before the
very
game.
Cool moment. Yeah. All female broadcast crew. And it was a great event because there was a buzz at Wintrust Arena. Dwayne Wade was there. There were some other people that saw this as a great opportunity to go out and support the Sky out of curiosity. And also the defending WNBA champions were in town, which is the bad news because it was a blowout. So you don't like that. But it was a great event in terms of the electricity there. John Vincent did the anthem. And if you heard that on the Score, as I did when I was driving, Mully, he held that note, the famous note in the anthem. I think it was over 20 seconds at least.
The final note?
Yeah, it was. Okay. You know how it is. John Vincent does an anthem that is unlike any other.
Yeah, sellout crowd, great energy in the building, great broadcast. The play, sadly, wasn't quite up to snuff.
We don't have to talk about the game.
But I'm just saying, they've played two games. And unfortunately, they played two teams that are favored to one, the defending champion, and the other, the Indiana Fever, was their first game, and they just got blown out in both games.
Two tough opponents to start the season. The average margin of victory is at 30, so that's not really a promising start, no.
The average margin of victory was 30 points.
Yeah.
So let's hope that they get – I think two of the games remaining – on the schedule for the Score are Fever games. So that's Caitlin Clark, and that's the team that beat them by 30-something points.
25-point deficit last night, 99-74. The Liberty set a WNBA regular season record with 19 threes. So pretty good effort by the defending champs. Not such a great debut at home for the Chicago Sky.
And I saw Angel Reese had 12 rebounds, so that's good, but she only had 2 points.
She had a rough night.
She had
based on what it looked like.
People are kind of digging at her a little bit, but I thought that they said that she was going to have more of a floor game this year, but it certainly didn't. And by the way, Caitlin Clark played last night, too, and didn't even hit a three-pointer.
11 points.
First time that's ever happened.
She struggled.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, you're going to struggle and don't get too worked up about it. But it was just good to have Layla on the air with them.
It was good. The next time will be June 7th against the Fever at the United Center.
I am, at the United Center. That's super cool. I'm totally miffed now that Tim Elko's been sent down.
Okay, yeah, so the White Sox.
You triggered me.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that, but the White Sox are at home this weekend, three games against the Rangers beginning tonight at Wrigley Field. It's a home series against a team that is a little disappointing, I think, this year.
Right, but a good team.
But a good team with talent. Yeah. Tim Elko, according to our reports, and we are getting, James Fox, Texas Show, is a listener. Cam Freeman is a freelance scout who tweeted this, and he's based in Charlotte, that Tim Elko back in Charlotte and is expected to be officially optioned today.
Okay. Tim Elko, we mentioned, has three home runs and 31 at-bats.
One every?
10.3 at-bats. And Andrew Vaughn has five home runs this year, including two in the last 2 weeks. That's, I think maybe Elko has inspired him. But Vaughn has 185 at-bats, five home runs. That's one every 37 at-bats.
So my takeaway from that is Tim Elko, feast or famine at the plate, but when you feast, he's going to give you a home run, and he's going to deliver that. Andrew Vaughn, not hitting for much better average-wise, and you're going to wait a lot longer between home runs for him. The look on your face.
You asked the question, what's the point of the season? You know, I think it triggered you. Well, it's a very legitimate question.
Yeah, what is the point of the season?
You believe the point of the season is player development.
I do.
Okay.
I don't think it's a radical thought.
So what are they trying to develop Andrew Vaughn?
This is inconsistent to me. This decision to send him back down, as you bring up Andrew Benintendi and Mike Tauchman, if that is a corresponding move or moves, then I don't get it, because you have players that you think are worth developing.
Tauchman's 33?
Yeah. One-year contract. It's a pretty modest one-year contract. And I understand that he provides you the professionalism and all those things. Maybe there's a role for him, but I wouldn't do it at the expense of development.
Benintendi, what is he?
The thing of it is, Molly, I don't understand. And maybe this can, maybe James Fox can tweet in or text in the answer to this. These are outfielders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if they have an overly crowded outfield. The Sox don't have stars in the outfield. Tim Elko was a first baseman designated hitter, but he's a slugger. You don't have sluggers in your lineup. You have one guy you're sending back to Charlotte who has homered once every 11 at bats. He's not hitting for average. We're not, you know, I wanted a little bit more of an extended cameo.
Andrew Vaughn, by the way, he has minor league options. In other words, you could send him down.
Make a statement.
Well, you could be making a statement. You would retain his rights. You wouldn't lose him. You'd probably embarrass him, but What are you worried about? Like, you wouldn't have to DFA him, is my point.
What are you worried about? That's a fair question. What are you worried about? My sense is, without knowing, maybe Chris Getz will address the assembled media this afternoon if he is so inclined. But my guess is that they're worried about diminishing any potential trade value he might have. I can't imagine he would have any.
Okay, Vaughn is the worst baseball player in all of the game, according to FanGraphs. He has a minus 1.6 WAR. Baseball Reference has him at a minus 1.3.
That's not good. And I don't want to overstate
not good.
The significance of these moves for a team that really is in last place, and these aren't the difference. This won't be the difference in the White Sox have winning 10 more games or 5 more games. But I do think you want to be consistent, and if you are consistent as an organization, I don't know what sending Tim Elko says about your commitment to development. You give him 31 at bats. Have you seen enough? Are they saying basically they've seen enough?
I think he has. I don't know how many hits he has, but he had a hit the other night that was ruled an error, so he loses the hit. So he's just having bad luck.
Seems kind of cruel.
Let's get to the phone lines. A lot of people want to check in on the subject. We'll start with Jeff. Jeff's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. A couple things I learned today, that Dustin doesn't only butcher the English language, he was an actual butcher, so that's good. And David took his birthday meal seriously, and then Monday's going to dress in white suit like Colonel Sanders. But on Tim
Memorial
Elko,
Day. Yeah.
Yes, Tim Elko, David brought it up, he's hitting a home run every 11 at-bats. Andrew Vaughn,
10.3.
5 home runs and 185 at-bats equals out to 1 every 37 at-bats, and he's batting 189. You just said he has options down in the AAA. Send him down. Let him see if he can rejuvenate anything we thought he needed to be. Leave Elko up, because Steve Stone said it. We need home run hitters in a home run park. And right now we got one home run hitter, and La Pantera is more like La Menina, the kitty cat, not the panther. So we need as many home run hitters right now as we can get. So keep Elko up, don't send him down.
They already sent him. You're absolutely right, Jeff. We have a texter who jumps in and says the Rangers sent Berger down. He's back now and hitting. So
that's a good point. The Rangers, and you know what? Jake Berger in town,
yes,
back at Wright Field,
that's
would
right,
be a good guy to talk to tonight. I wonder if Bruce Levine will be on the story, as he typically is. He'll be at the park, my guess is. He would be a good conversation to have because
Homer?
Jake Berger learned from that experience, it seems.
Homer. Does he hit one tonight?
Berger?
I'm asking.
Berger going deep would be really something.
Well, I mean, you know, especially like Fry is gone, no Colas. You need Berger to come through for you, even if he's on the other team.
The Sox remain starving for offense.
Let's try Tony's in Wonder Lake. Hey, Tony. Hey, Tony.
Good morning, guys. Don't ever compare the White Sox with a team like the Rangers. The Sox are the most dysfunctional organization in all sports. They do things, I think, just to irate the fans and to make you guys scratch your head wondering what the hell are they doing. I just don't get what their logic is with anything that they do, not just this move. Let's talk about the years that they wasted on Yoan Moncada. And let's talk about the years they wasted on Jimenez. And to listen to that ridiculously deflating interview that Luis Robert did a couple days ago.
Yeah.
How can you expect a major league ball player to have any other perspective when he plays for an absolute laughingstock?
Okay, well, what's the point of the season? That's the question. What is it they're trying to get done? You know, and how does this aid them in that? I just don't quite understand. I don't know. I mean, I have suspicions.
Well, here's what I think is what we do here is some people think all we do is complain, and I can understand that.
Okay.
But I think what we also try to do is point out inconsistencies when they seem obvious to us. And I don't want to speak for you, but I think that this seems like an inconsistency here because bringing up Tim Elko after we clamored for it, they could have defended almost leaving him down there if they were going to send him back after 31 at-bats. But leaving him here seems like an inconsistent logic because if this season is all about developing and seeing what you have, getting your prospects better and acclimated to more prepared for major league pitching, like they did with Colson Montgomery. That was unorthodox. They take him out. They take him out of Charlotte at AAA. They send him to their Arizona camp for 2 weeks, try to fix his swing, then put him back in because they're worried about what? His development. Well, Andrew Vaughn could probably benefit from a similar vacation in Charlotte. Now, he doesn't have to work on his swing. He can work on whatever he wants, but I think that would be a statement, and he has not earned the right to stay. So if this is about development and establishing a culture that Will Venable talks about quite a bit,
you know,
that.
I don't want to be – I'm not sitting here saying Tim Elko is, you know, the bee's knees. I don't even know where that expression came from. But I am saying that there's a chance he might run into a homer. And this is a team
– that needs to run into homers.
Needs to run into a run, okay? And there's a chance the guy could just – oh, hey, oh, my God, he hit a home run.
He's got power.
He does it once every 10.3 at-bats. So why choose the guy that does it one every 37 at-bats? He doesn't do it. Andrew Vaughn doesn't run into a homer. He's not a very good baseball player. He certainly isn't what they thought. What was the award? The Herman Award? Whatever that award was for the best hitter in baseball. And he hasn't lived up to that. I know they drafted him high, but he hasn't done anything. And it's getting to a point where, you know, what are you doing? We're paying him, so we're going to fill out the year. I don't get it. I don't know what they're after. I guess I don't have a clue. I don't understand even remotely.
I don't either.
He's
very difficult.
He's kind of an undersized first baseman. I don't understand.
I would like to know they're thinking.
They measured him recently, and he turned out he's an inch shorter than they thought.
Here's what I think.
I mean, what the hell else could go wrong?
Here's what we can't agree on. if you're going to make a move like this, then I think Chris Getz, who's been pretty transparent, should probably explain it.
Yes.
And that will open up the door to a broader conversation about the purpose of this season. What are you looking to do? And why are you making these decisions along the way? By the way, Bee's Knees, I think it goes back to the 20s.
See?
A world champion Charleston dancer named was Bee Jackson, a popular figure in New York, and the dancing was, you know, Bee's Knees. As like it reflects something that is very happy, very good.
Okay, this is a true story, and as long as you brought it up, I will tell the story. I recently went to Charleston, South Carolina, and the night before we were leaving for spring break, I turned on the old YouTube and played the Charleston just so everybody would have a laugh.
That's good.
And we were trying to learn the Charleston. We're having a laugh with it. And it turns out that the Charleston came from a dance that was done in Charleston, South Carolina. There is a connection with the name. And they moved it to Broadway. They put on a Broadway show. The show apparently bombed, but the dance took flight. So then I go to Charleston, and we do a little tour of the city in a carriage. And they drive by this place, and the guy's like, hey, this is an orphanage, and they had young children in here, and they all could dance, and this is where the Charleston began.
It's a great origin story.
And a guy was walking down the street, saw these kids dance, and said, what the hell are you doing? We call it the Charleston.
The Charleston.
And he was a Broadway producer, and that's where the whole thing came from.
Boom.
And I'm just saying,
boom.
You brought it up,
well,
but I happen to have a story
about
the Charleston.
That's good, because then Bee Jackson performed the Charleston at a high level. So now it was referred to as, after the in the roaring 20s, something impressive or delightful. The Bee's Knees.
I mean, sometimes it all just comes
together. Okay, so wait, before we get to break, so you looked that up because you did a YouTube search before you went to Charleston on vacation. I have to ask you this, though.
Yes.
You're on your way this weekend.
Yes.
You're enjoying a big family trip to Detroit.
We're going to Motown.
Did you check out Eminem last night? Did you have a little bit of Eminem search on the YouTube machine? Did you look at some old videos from him,
well,
8 Mile?
I mean, you had to bring it up.
Great movie.
Okay.
Because you know what? You got one shot this weekend. You got one shot.
Well, you know.
This is your moment.
I have been to the Motown Museum. Barry Gordy started Motown. They bought like a bunch of buildings, and you can go into the recording studio where Marvin would tape his stuff, and you can, you know, Smokey Robinson, Diana Ross, all the Motown stars. That's where it all became. This is a celebration this weekend of Berry Gordy. They're going to have some live bands in Motown Museum.
That's awesome.
And that's on the agenda,
buddy. That's great. Okay,
so
great.
So you brought it up.
My mind went to Eminem.
You're
thinking Motown because you're one step ahead.
Because they have actual concerts going.
That's culture. That's Detroit.
Thank you, buddy.
Identity. That's
no
history.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, and you're going to appreciate that. That's
great.
Good.
Music.
And you can wear white.
I will be in the car listening to Motown the whole way to Detroit. Buddy.
In your white
I will
slacks.
I'm not wearing white until Monday.
Okay.
I'm not Mitch. I can't go around making people happy for a living.
That was an unexpected surprise.
That was so much fun. Great things. See, everything's it's all falling together.
Everything's falling together.
All right. We've got Ross Tucker next. We're going to bring in Ross. He's out in Philly, and he does all sorts of great football work, and we want to talk to him about the reaction in that town to the Eagles' big win. Eagles winning, always winning. And we'll talk to him about all sorts of football stuff, too. It is Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider, host of the Ross Tucker Podcast.
Caleb Williams. I have some friends that are Bears fans, obviously. I mean, I haven't seen Bears fans as excited as they took Justin Fields 3 years ago. Hopefully this works out better.
Analyst for Westwood One.
Bully ball up front. It's just inside zone to the left. That's as physical of a play as you get.
Ross Tucker with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
If Wildest Dreams by Taylor Swift came on, I would rock out because that song's awesome.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ross Tucker is always a fun guy to talk to. And you can, he's also the host. You can listen to the Ross Tucker Podcast And you should follow him on social media at Ross Tucker NFL. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Ross, good morning. How are you?
I am fantastic, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
You know, we both agree that it's a good thing that the push-tush wasn't banned. I didn't see any of the proof that it was bad for people, that it was any more physical a play than many that are run. Maybe it looks like a rugby play, whatever people are saying about it. But I felt like the only reason you ban it is because the Eagles could do it better than anyone else. And the answer is, get good at it yourself, right? But I get it. It's unique, and that quarterback is a unique player who can run it. But I really did feel like it was unfair that they were just trying to get rid of it because somebody does it well.
Well, I think there's two reasons why they were trying to get rid of it. One is because it's been a couple of years now, and nobody's really been able to stop it, at least when the Eagles run it, with any type of success. And then the other thing is they just don't like the way it looks. You know, they just don't like visually the way it looks. I got to tell you, you guys know I do the Eagles preseason games on TV and do some work for them during the season with social media videos or whatever. And I have mixed emotions. I'm like so tired of people talking about it and whining about it that there was part of me that did want it to get banned so that we wouldn't talk about it anymore. The other thing about it is, even if they banned it, okay, these are the two things I've tried to make clear to people. Even if the Eagles just decided, okay, that they were going to run a conventional quarterback sneak, they would be highly, highly successful. Because the biggest key to the whole thing is their left guard, Landon Dickerson, and their left tackle, Jordan Mailata, those guys are absolute monsters. Like, monsters. I mean, you guys know I played next to some big guys, Flozell the Hotel Adams when I was in Dallas. And
well, that's a name.
Mike Williams from Texas when I was with the Bills. These guys are enormous. Mailata's 6'8", 380. Landon 6'6", 360. They're in the prime of their career. These guys are like movers of men. The other aspect of it, and I actually reached out to several officials to confirm this, but you know the way the Packers or whoever drew up this proposal, it just said you can't push the runner, right? So the Eagles are very good with knowing the rules. They have a full-time guy. That's all he does. They could have had the two guys line up next to Hurts and then just push the center and left guard forward. You know, or even if you can't do that, you can, by the way, but even if you can't do that, just kind of put your helmet on the hip of Hurts and wedge block without pushing him forward. My point was, I think it still, stylistically, would have looked the same. You know, in other words, let's say they pass it, and everybody, oh, they banned the tush push. First game next year, I think the Eagles line up, and it looks very, very similar, and everybody's kind of looking at each other like, what do we even accomplish here?
Because it's a quarterback sneak. It's just one of those things. You describe it well. I thought it was fascinating and funny. Some people didn't take it that way in Chicago, but when Ben Johnson said he was not worried about it because it's not an explosive play. It is a play that leads to first downs and touchdowns, but his answer was it's not an explosive play, so he doesn't spend too much time worrying about it.
Yeah, I saw that comment, and I think the positive about Ben Johnson is he's been fantastic the last couple years in Detroit, and I think if I'm a Bears fan, I'm really excited. I thought that was a pretty stupid comment, to be honest with you. I mean, first of all, they only run it when they're, like, on the one-yard line or when it's fourth and one. So I would love to ask Ben what explosive plays they're running at the goal line. Or even on fourth and one, okay, every once in a while Ben will call a play-action pass and they'll get an explosive play out of it. But give me a break. I mean, that's what I thought was laughable about the Packers calling it a pace of play issue. You know how much the play continues because of that? If you can't run that or they don't have success, then it's a turnover on down. Then we go to commercial break. Then comes the other team. That leads to so many conversions, which then leads to explosive plays, which then leads to scoring. Like that argument makes no sense to me whatsoever.
You know, frankly, if they want to end that play, if they want to like make it less successful, then they ought to just get rid of a snap count on that play. Everybody knows when the ball's going, so everybody can get the same amount of push on both sides of the football. It's like, well, there's no way of actually of telling them you can't dominate the line of scrimmage.
Well, and Mully, two things that are really important here, okay? This is really important. I see all this fake news on social media. Well, let the defense be able to do it then. The defense can. You know, the defense can absolutely, the linebackers can push the D lineman forward. They're only not allowed to do that on a kick, you know, when it's a try for a field goal or an extra point. So the defense can absolutely, the linebackers can get up there and they can push the D lineman forward. So that's something that people are misinformed on that I see all the time on social media. The other thing is, nothing is preventing every other team from doing it, right? So what's preventing every other team from doing it? Either they don't have the personnel, well, that's your fault, or they don't have the acumen or the skill to run it properly, which, by the way, then takes away the whole argument in the first place that it's not a skillful play, it's not a football play, which is the other one that like bothers me a lot. It's not a football play. Okay, but having a guy that played soccer in high school come out on the field and kick a ball 58 yards to decide who went, that's a football play? Like a guy that played soccer in high school determining who wins, that's more of a football play than 22 guys running into each other?
That's a good point. Yeah, I think that I'm glad that the conversation is maybe dying down a little bit because I think everybody has a little bit of tush-push fatigue. But Ross, when you talk about Ben Johnson, it's interesting because this has been a big week in Chicago because of the Seth Wickersham story last week, and Caleb Williams did not choose to address this head-on. Ben Johnson did. Did you see what he said, and what are your thoughts on overall the way that this has been handled?
Yep, I did, and you know, I hate when I come on and I have I want to call it bad news, but I have major concerns about Caleb Williams, like major concerns. It feels to me like more often than not, he does the wrong thing, and this isn't a talent thing, and I don't think I've ever met him, but we can have a discussion, and I've seen all the Bears fans. He was right. You know, Waldron and Eberflus are idiots. He was right. Like, I've seen that. I get that. We can have an argument about whether or not it's an issue that he and his dad were thinking about trying to avoid the Bears. I don't have any, like, problem with that.
Right.
Why would you tell a writer this? Why would you be talking about this with a writer and then not go through with it? I mean, that's my biggest issue. I feel like he either gets really bad advice or his awareness rating on Madden needs to go down like 30 points. Because I also thought it was a really, really poor decision for him to not address it this week. Because it's going to get addressed, right? People are going to ask him about it the first time they're allowed to ask him about it. So why would you want to drag it on? Right? Like, he should have Monday come on and said, yep, you know, my dad was talking to a guy back then. I had some concerns, but when I came out here to Hallis Hall and met everybody, I thought, nope, you know what? I want to do this. But yeah, we had some concerns early on just because of the history. Boom, then it's over. I mean, it's like, it reminds me of Thanksgiving when the Bears were trying to do the right thing, which was run a play and then use the timeout. But Caleb Williams decided, oh, no, I need to audible, and then they ran out of time, and Eberflus knew after the game that he can't throw Caleb Williams under the bus, and so then he just kind of ate it. There's a lot of concerns there. He might end up having a great career, and goodness knows they put him in a position to succeed, right? Like, you couldn't have gotten a better head coach. They went out and got an entirely new interior of the offensive line. Their first two picks are arguably the best receiving tight end in the draft and a speedster that my guy Greg Cosell on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast said he absolutely loves. I just want us to all be on the same page that if it doesn't go well this year or the next 2 years or whatever, it's time we start talking about the quarterback and not blaming everyone else. Because that was the other part of it that really bothered me as a former player. There was a quote in there where he says, you know, nobody tells me what to watch. You know, I just turn the film on. Like,
yeah.
To me, that's so insulting on so many levels. First of all, every quarterback, every player should be watching some film on their own, right? Whether it's at the facility or when they go home. Every single guy should be watching, I would say, a decent amount of film on your own, right? Like, that's part of it. And then secondly, it's really, I thought, insulting to Lincoln Riley, the USC head coach, who's had, I mean, how many number one picks, how many Heisman Trophy winners, to act like he never said anything to Caleb Williams about things you can watch when you're watching film. There's a lack of accountability there that I would say is highly concerning, because the best guys I was ever around, like Tom Brady, it's the exact opposite. Anytime Brady messed up in any way, he was harder on himself than anyone else. He would yell at himself. I mean, the guy's like a psycho, right? And I'm not around him enough, so I can't speak to it like other people can. I'm very curious about Caleb Williams' accountability.
Yeah, I understand why you would be, because we've heard that from other former quarterbacks, other people talking about that's kind of making excuses that no one's sitting down with you for the tape. And, you know, you want help? Ask for it. They're dying to help you. So I've heard a lot of that stuff. I would like to get the story from him. I think a lot of this stuff is coming through his father to Seth Wickersham. And I like Seth. I think he's a good guy. And I believe that everything he's reporting is accurate. I just don't know that it's coming directly from the quarterback. You know what I mean? And I'm making excuses for him. But
in fairness, he can't control his dad.
Yes.
But he sure as heck can say, hey, Dad, you're not helping me here. Like, you're not putting me in a good spot.
Right. But Ross,
I couldn't tell, to be honest with you, in Seth's article, I couldn't tell a couple of those quotes if they were direct from Caleb to Seth, or it was what Caleb said to his dad, and his dad relayed that to Seth.
That's why it's important for him to talk.
That's what's missing,
because
is the context of all this.
If it's just his dad, it's taken an entirely different way.
Exactly. He needs to talk.
Yeah, I mean, I just – listen, he might end up being what the Bears haven't had in forever, which is a long-time franchise quarterback, top 10 guy. I would just say I would be discouraged at this point in the process, right? I would say it would be more surprising to me – like, if I had to bet, okay, is Caleb Williams going to be the Bears' starting quarterback in 3 years – I'd probably bet no if I had to bet yes or no right now.
We'll explore that.
Just based on we've seen so far. I mean, then it's like the sacks he takes, and that went back to college. I don't know, man. Like, that's hard for quarterbacks to get rid of that. If they have a tendency to take a lot of sacks, that's hard for them to get rid of. So we'll see. Listen, Bears fans are incredible. I hope he's awesome. I hope the Bears are awesome. It'd be fun if the Bears were back in the playoffs, but I'd be lying to you guys if I didn't tell you I had my doubts right now.
Ross, we're up against it, but tell us about futurefans.com.
Oh, my gosh. I just found out about this. This is by far the best way to get your kids to actually sit next to you and watch the games. These guys came up with it. You know how it's impossible to get your kid off their iPad or whatever? The way we used to sit there and watch the games with our dads, these guys have cracked the code. They've figured it out. It's a storybook-led activity box. So you read about, like, first down, second down, third down. Then you do a beanbag toss. I'm telling you, I've talked to 10 families now that they now get their 7-year-old or their 8- or 9-year-old to sit there and watch the Bengals game with them or the Eagles. And I don't know, there must be a lot of excitement in Chicago right now, because
the guys that run the company, they were telling me that they've sold a bunch of these in Chicago over the last week or so. So highly encourage you, if you want to have a lifelong fan of a kid that actually comes to your house and watches every Bears game with you, it's futurefans.com. And if you go right now, they get like a 20% discount. You get coupon if you put your email in there, futurefans.com. This way you can actually have your kid watch the game with you and not be upstairs on his iPad.
Great stuff, Ross. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Ross.
All right, see you guys.
That is Ross Tucker. That's really interesting.
Lot there.
Yeah.
A lot
of people getting
conversation.
Angry.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like it.
I think
don't
there's
ever
a lot
imply
there.
The it's not all going to be seashells and balloons. You understand?
Well, I think that there you can be critical of what to expect, and also I think we need to hear from Caleb Williams before you conclude a lot of things that I think people are jumping to.
All right, we're going to squeeze in Bruce next. Find out what's going on with the All-Star game. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mully and Haw, live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Fun to talk to Ross Tucker.
Well, Ross is credible, he's respected, and he has strong opinions. And his voice carries in NFL circles. I do think he represents the segment of
skeptics,
maybe Bears fans, but the skeptics about Caleb Williams. And if you had doubts about Caleb Williams and his, I hesitate to use the word maturity, but his approach before and after last season, then this story reinforced those questions and doubts. If you have been a Caleb Williams supporter, I think, in fairness, everything he said is valid. I don't want to discredit anything that he said. I do want to wait until we hear from Caleb Williams, because as you pointed out correctly, and as I have tried to repeat on occasion, until Caleb Williams provides a context, I don't know how much to hold him responsible for all of this pre-draft stuff. And then, it's a moot point to me, because moving forward, this problem has been addressed with the new coaching staff.
You know, I am more concerned about the stuff post-draft, you know, when last year was going on and when they kind of he felt abandoned. He felt like he couldn't get help. That bothers me a lot more. Of course he didn't want to come here. Of course he had a good relationship with Kevin O'Connell. That was the only one of the NFL head coaches with a high draft pick that was looking for a quarterback.
Who wouldn't?
Who would not?
The guy's likable. He's
a good guy. And why wouldn't you want to be coached by him?
Yeah.
I got no problem with any of that
stuff. But I think you're right about the post the post-draft stuff, because this is the one thing I want him to address. And I think the one thing the Bears – Ben Johnson was terrific in the way that he handled everything.
No doubt.
Got in front of it. But, Mully, what you want to hear from Caleb Williams, I think, is that – or what you're concerned about is if when things go bad, if he tends to isolate himself.
Well, that's the question.
You don't want a quarterback, and you can't have a leader
isolate
himself in times of adversity. And if that's the one thing that you're concerned about, he can fully address that head on. And he can talk about why he, you know, was watching film alone, and if that was even true. If we want to, he's got to confirm
I'd
that.
I'd like to hear about it.
I would too.
And I'd like to know, well, didn't you feel you could ask for help?
You've got to ask for help.
Why can you not ask for help?
And are you more equipped to ask for help now? Do you trust the people you're asking for help now?
He's getting a choice. I think he's getting help, because I think this guy has got to get his system installed, and he needs the quarterback
on
the
same
page, and they're going through.
There's a new story to write.
I like that.
And Ben Johnson is here to author it, in his words. And I also thought it was funny that Ross Tucker responded to Ben Johnson's characterization of the tush push not being an explosive play, that it rankled him. Because Ben Johnson is going to rankle people. He already has. He already has. Whether you're Matt LaFleur or I think some people reacted negatively to his dismissive answer about the tush push, which is a play that many people value. And Ben Johnson's like, is it, hey, Bigsy, is it an explosive play? What does it lead to?
I got to tell you, I think that if the Bears had nothing but the tush push, then they would have something. If they had been able to develop that play in a similar fashion when a guy like Justin Fields was here, that may have kept them from having like the worst offense in the league.
If they could have thrilled the nation with their fourth down formation.
I'm not joking. I really think
you think if they could have done one thing right?
Yes, they did one thing right. Occasionally the quarterback could take off running, and it was an extraordinary thing.
They ran the ball from the quarterback position better than anybody in the NFL.
That's right. And that made
them a distinction.
That gave them a good running game. That was the running game.
What else did it give you?
Gave you like a lot of different losses.
It gave you 12 losses, losses.
No, it's obviously you need to throw the football and it's not enough. But I'm just saying that had they done one thing well, I think you might have thought,
I think what you're saying is that had they done one thing well, their coach would not be dismissing the idea of discussing
right.
or its importance.
I was blown away by that statistic that the most fourth down tries since 2022 was number one, Philadelphia, who had 108. Number two was 55, let's say, for Buffalo. And number three was the Bears with 16. Did you think of the Bears? I thought they were desperate. They had to go for it on fourth down. They were trailing and they were desperate. But the idea that if they were going for it that often, then they should have perfected some methodology.
You think they'd get better at it.
They never got good at it. No. I'm not defending the push-tush. I don't really care that much.
I like Lakeshore Dive. If they would have perfected it, it would have been a better call, the Lakeshore Dive. I love it when you're flustered. Coomer and Bruce coming up at the 8 o'clock hour.
We'll talk to Rod next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Oh, God, take me away.